Hey everyone, it's Greg Gutfeld. This is the one, the only one. I'm so excited because I have quite an impressive guest today. And talk about perfect timing. I have with me Ben Shapiro. He's the editor-in-chief of The Daily Wire, the host of the immensely successful Ben Shapiro Show. He's way, 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 way successful. I almost hate him for his success. He was like, at age 17, was like the youngest syndicated columnist. So you can see why I hate him. Hey, Ben, how are you?
Doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. So let's talk about the timing of this podcast. Yesterday, your friend and mine, Steve Bannon, had stepped down from where both you and I had either worked or contributed at the Breitbart website. And you tweeted something. I think, did you tweet something like Andrew would have been proud or Andrew would have been happy or something like that?
Yeah, I think it's a good day for my friend.
Right, right.
And then a picture of Andrew.
Yeah. Why do you think explain why you tweeted that? Because I think we both have kind of strong feelings about the impact or the impact that maybe Bannon had on Breitbart.
Yeah, I mean, my feeling is that you knew Andrew for a really long time. I knew Andrew for a really long time, and anybody who knew Andrew for a long time remembers before the last year when it was all hashtag war, mm-hmm. when Andrew was the happy-go-lucky guy who roller-skated down to protesters and brought them to Applebee's.
Yeah.
And Andrew's whole kind of modus operandi was being the happy warrior, trollster, he used to call himself a merry prankster, and he was very much interested in the culture fighting what he thought were lying media narratives, fighting the culture inside Hollywood. He was the one who popularized the idea that culture was upstream of politics in the first place.
Right.
Bannon comes in, he turns it into a DC-centric site that is mainly interested in forwarding Steve Bannon's personal political power, mm-hmm. And using it as a weapon, using the site as a weapon against Steve Bannon's personal political opponents or on behalf of Steve Bannon's personal political allies. It became Bannon.com, not Breitbart.com. It bore very little resemblance to what Andrew had originally intended for the site, and it certainly bore no resemblance at all to Andrew as a person, because Andrew, well, I mean, despite the media's attempts, it's perfect proof that what Andrew said was right about the Democrat media complex. Despite the media's attempts to paint Andrew as some sort of nasty, mean, angry guy, Andrew was one of the most garrulous people alive.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just a wonderful person in person. I've always said to folks that, me knowing him for a long time and you meeting him once, basically you knew him 95% as well as I did, because
yeah.
that's who he was. Everything was just right there. And Bannon is precisely the opposite. Bannon was a manipulative con man who would sort of edge his way into people's good graces and then use them for what they were worth. He was all about the perception of power. Can you imagine Andrew ever calling himself Darth Vader? that's what Bannon did, right? Bannon
yeah.
would go around calling himself Darth Vader, and I'm power behind the scenes, and I'm this dark shadow that's manipulating forces. Andrew, I mean, are you freaking kidding me?
Like, yeah.
they're almost precisely personal opposites. And by the way, the idea that Andrew was deep friends with Steve Bannon is utter nonsense and complete revisionist history. I remember once sitting with Andrew, is before I worked at Breitbart, and Bannon was wandering through the office because Bannon was lending him office space. And I said, "Who's that guy?" And Andrew said, "Oh, yeah, this guy's lending me office space."
That's hilarious. You mentioned something about knowing Andrew, and I bet this happens to you on Twitter and elsewhere, and it must upset you, because it used to happen to me during the campaign when I was writing for Breitbart, and by the way, I left amicably. I still love those. I still love Larry and John. We get I don't have any, but I noticed the change, and they didn't need me anymore, or I don't think they wanted me anymore, and we just kind of like. I was like, one of those spaceships that was just dropped from the other part of the spaceship. But anyway, when people would tell you that you didn't know Andrew, like they'd go like, because they didn't like your opinion, they go, "Well, Andrew would be ashamed of you," or "You're really letting Andrew down." It would like drive me nuts, because none of these people knew him, and it's like,
that's right. And I'm really careful. I mean, I hope I've tried to be careful about saying what I think Andrew would have said or what he would have done. Like, only in really clear cut cases do I think this is something Andrew clearly would not have done. But for example, I didn't support Trump during the last election cycle, mm-hmm. and when people ask me if Andrew would have supported Trump, I usually say, I think he probably would have, but I have no idea. Right? I'm not going to speak for my friend who's dead. Like, that's not a...
This is a good point.
I think that's completely inappropriate.
This is a good point, though, because, the thing is, I always felt it was inappropriate, too. And I interviewed Susie Breitbart on this podcast, and we didn't really talk about... we avoided that. But I do think... Maybe it's okay to be inappropriate because I was thinking about this. I think Andrew, it wouldn't have been his first. I'm going to be inappropriate. I think it wouldn't have been Andrew's first choice. But there are two things that Andrew really, really loved. He loved to laugh, and he loved to go after the media. And I got to say, Trump made you laugh, and I don't. And he, all he does is go after the media. And I have a feeling that those two things, you know, would.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you, and I've actually said this before about, you know, when people ask me the question, that's why I say I think he probably would have supported Trump.
Yeah.
The one thing he wouldn't have done is turn his site into a fanboy site for Trump.
Yeah.
Right. Turning it like that was definitely not Andrew. Like the idea of using his site in service to anyone's political ambition or hitching your wagon to a star.
Yeah.
Like that was definitely not Andrew, right? Andrew was a gadfly. He would have enjoyed, I am sure, Trump knocking the media. He would have gotten a huge kick out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he would have enjoyed Trump's sense of humor. But he also understood that Trump was not particularly conservative. I mean, he was saying that back in 2011.
Yeah, right.
So this idea that he ever would have turned it into what it became under Bannon, which was basically a Trump propaganda site, that was not something that Andrew ever would have contemplated. It was such a bizarre change. Like the fact that Breitbart, as in kind of the general parlance, has now been hijacked to mean something that's so different from what Andrew was. It's one of the weirder sort of cognitive dissonances for me.
Yeah, it was. I remember when I was writing there. Now, I my position there was not to drive eyeballs. I was there because, you know, I wrote about music and I wrote about movies and TV shows. My whole thing was to add some kind of cultural edge to it to show that not all conservatives. That was my thing. And of course, when they made the change, that was not needed. And I noticed it in the comments. And you're not supposed to read the comments, but I did. And it was just like, you know, it was like, what has happened?
I think that's right.
It was
I think that's right. I mean, if you remember the old days of Breitbart, I mean, you do because you were writing for Big Hollywood before it was Breitbart.com.
Yeah.
Right. But before they even flipped the site into one site.
Yeah.
The comments were always sort of reflective of Andrew's persona in the sense that it was a bunch of people who were kind of, you know, talking about politics, but more in kind of a fun way.
Right.
More as an entertainment way, you know, having interesting conversations. I remember Andrew was a big fan of like the Ace of Spades comment section.
Yes.
Because he liked that kind of stuff. And now you read the comment section of Breitbart. I didn't even look at it to my detriment. I should have looked at it. I didn't even look at it until after I left. And I thought, oh, boy, was this the site that I was writing for? Like, was this the audience? You know, the people who use cuck in a non-ironic sense?
Like, he would have used those words with just open mockery. He would have made fun of that whole idea. Because the thing about – and it goes – Andrew was he was a lover of broken toys. Like he would introduce you to people that were really good, but also people that weren't. Because he was so open, and because of that, he was inclusive. Like it wasn't about
creating. Right.
Like he wouldn't go after. Like it was also weird. Was like going after your fellow conservatives or libertarians. He was quite the opposite. It was more like, so what if you disagree? His big phrase was so. Like, if you said, God, I can't believe so-and-so said this, you'd go, so what? Big deal. You know? And I mean, come on. That's not the battle. And what happened was you noticed that the battle became internal by design, perhaps by one person, which was turned, you know, you are more – everybody had to be more X than the other person. You have to be more nationalistic, more patriotic, more right-wing. And that was never how Andrew was. You know?
No, that's exactly right. Andrew was not purity test guy.
Yeah,
he definitely was not. Andrew, I mean, I've said before, I don't think even Andrew was political. I'm not sure he's a political person. I think that Andrew was a guy who, I mean, when I wrote my book Bullies, which is the only book I've ever written that was dedicated to somebody outside my family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Andrew is the only person where after he, like legitimately the only person in my life, I'm young enough, I haven't had a lot of close relatives die.
Yeah.
But he's the only person who after he died, I actually cried because Andrew was not political, right? Andrew was a guy who hated bullies. And he was annoyed by people who were self-righteously proclaiming themselves, you know, the virtue guardians of the United States. It drove him up a wall.
Yeah.
And that's why our friendship was so weird, because I'm an Orthodox Jew who is very interested in personal virtue. Like, I'm virgin until marriage, Ben Shapiro guy. But I was friends with Andrew, who's like a D student at Tulane, right?
Yeah.
Tulane, who was not a clean liver until Tuesday. And yet we were good friends because that's who, but that's not about me. That's about Andrew, right? That's because that's who Andrew was. Andrew could be friends with just the widest variety of people. And you saw that Breitbart just got more and more and more insular to the point where it turned into, you know, people like you or people like me, we weren't purist enough. If I'm not a pure enough conservative, I don't know who's out there. I seriously don't.
Yeah,
it was a point of annoyance, because what it really felt like is they were shifting the definition of purity based on what benefited Steve Bannon, and using purity as a weapon as opposed to an actual test of ideological kinship.
Yeah, you know what else was weird? And I'm sure, I mean, this is something that I hammered a lot on The Five before the election, was that the people that were demanding purity were loyalist to a politician who was the least pure, like not partisan. I mean,
yep.
Trump is not a partisan. He's not. I'm actually really impressed with a lot of the conservative stuff he's done, despite having a daughter who I believe is very liberal. I mean, how he was able to pull out of that Paris Accord. I mean, he's doing stuff that I didn't think he would do. But back then, you had purists calling you a cuck while supporting somebody who's basically kind of like a Rockefeller Republican. But now, I mean, I don't think he's that way anymore, but I had no idea what he believed in.
I agree. No, this is right. I mean, you had to base what you were saying about the guy on the evidence. And the evidence was not that he was some sort of Reagan-esque conservative. He was openly saying this is the Republican Party, not the conservative party.
Yeah.
So, you know, you had people who were doing the whole, you're not pure enough because you're not supporting Trump sufficiently. And what I had always said was, look, I may not vote for Trump, but I'm not going to blame anybody who does.
Yeah.
Like, I understand people who are voting for him to stop Hillary Clinton. You know, that my own emotional tendency is to do the same thing.
Yeah.
But that was the part about what had happened to Breitbart that was so tragic, is that, again, it's so weird to say things, what had happened to Breitbart, because you and I knew the actual guy.
Yeah.
But the actual guy had nothing to do with what the site was in the last couple of years, even though I think I agree with you. There are people there who I still personally like and still personally have the best hopes for. I think the worst mistake Larry Selhoff ever made was bringing in Steve Bannon, and I hope that Larry will go back to more what the original vision for the site was. They still have some people over there who were there when Andrew died, and who were there before Bannon.
Yeah, you know, I think my two thoughts on that, and I do think that Larry had nothing but the best intentions, because the best intention was, how does a widow and her children survive when— you were married to Andrew Breitbart, who probably didn't tell you anything about how the finances were done. Or, I mean, it's like, all of a sudden your husband, the person that you've relied upon, just drops dead. And it's like, I think Larry is thinking singularly about, okay, more clicks, more ad revenue, more money for the family. Because you know, Larry's not an ideologue. Larry's not.
No, not at all.
He's
Larry,
like,
I think Larry voted for Obama in 2008. Larry is not.
Yeah.
Larry's definitely not a hardcore right winger.
Yeah. Sure. I think they were putting the family first, and then circumstances and the world. I mean, I who would have seen this coming?
I'll say there is that I think that he had the best of intentions and the best of hopes for Bannon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he thought that Bannon was sort of going to be his window into the business world, particularly.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that he expected Bannon to exert as much editorial control as Bannon. It turned out that what Bannon really wanted to do was exert power.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that was not in the original cards. So, you know, to that extent, I think it was a mistake by Larry. I do think he had the best intentions.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that, you know, they go back to, again, it's a very successful site with a lot of traffic.
Yeah.
I hope that with the cash flow questions behind them, I hope that they can now move on to something beyond Steve Bannon's crusade for being the most powerful guy in the room.
Yeah. I wonder I think they're having these discussions. I don't know. You got to be really subtle about these changes, you know, and I don't even, I have high hopes.
I think they're stuck between, I have hopes too. I think they are stuck a little bit between a rock and a hard place, because they've been so much made in Bannon's mold for so long now that their audience is not Bannon-esque, but very, very Trump friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they start being critical of Trump, and especially after they just had to oust their chairman for basically crapping all over Trump and his family, I think that that's going to be a hard sell for the audience.
Yeah.
So going back to what you're saying about the comment section is indicative of who actually reads the site.
Mm-hmm.
And the commenters in 2017 or 2018 are not the same as the commenters in 2012. So they have to take that into account when it comes to maintaining their audience. So I don't think they can, you know, be hypercritical of Trump on immigration, for example, even if they disagree with what he's doing on immigration. But I would hope that at least their focus starts to move away from all of the Matt Boyle, DC insider scuttlebutt nonsense, and more toward the broad media narrative that Andrew actually was interested in.
Do you think, because I haven't read the Daily Wire's comment section. I'm not even sure if you have one. I've read articles.
We have a comment section. I don't read it either, so I can't tell you much about it. But
yeah, I mean, is it? I always feel like it's a lot of work to moderate comments, but I think it's like washing your car. You know, it's like upkeeping of your house. It's like, yeah, it's a lot of work, but it makes the place look better.
Yeah, I think there's a dichotomy between you want people engaged.
Yeah.
But when you get people engaged, then this is actually a discussion we're literally having like today at the company over a comment section, because I'd heard that there was some kind of garbage in the comments, and one of the things that we're considering doing is basically mandating that you comment. Only if you have a Facebook profile. So you have to be a real human being, because
that's
if you're
good.
An egg, then because you're on Twitter too and you have a huge following, all the crappiest comments come from the anonymous people, right? Because if you're hiding behind an egg, then you can say legitimately the crappiest things in the world about people, and that's what the comment section is degenerate into. So I think there's something to be said for the idea that if you're going to say something in a comment section, attach your name to it. I mean, you do it, I do it. It doesn't seem to me that we're not talking, and I understand the argument for anonymity, but the argument for anonymity is mainly so that there's not blowback against you personally for your comments. And I think that in that respect, anonymity is good. But if it's anonymity just so you can be a jackass, I'm not a big fan. I mean, let's not pretend that the commenters at Breitbart or even at Daily Wire are Alexander Hamilton and James Madison trying to write the Federalist Papers. That's not what's going on here.
You know what? It reminds me of a thought that I had about when you were talking about if Andrew had still been working on the site or whatever, what were the things that he wouldn't have allowed to happen? And I do think that he would have been able to separate the vile contingent, which is small. I think it's small because you see it on the left. You see it in every stripe. There is a vocal. He would have separated that. He wouldn't have had any patience for the movement. If he noticed that there
totally
was any kind of white power scent to anything, he would have been like, get that out of here. He was a non-practicing Jew. I mean, he would have had no – I mean, it's like he wouldn't have put up – I think he would have been pretty fast. This has always been, a legitimate flaw for I think that Trump was worried as a salesman, you don't want to ruin any sale. So, obnoxious people have to buy refrigerators too. So, racists have to buy cars too. So it's kind of like that's this weird salesman thing. Like, if I don't have to condemn him, I won't. But that's something that would have been there if Andrew was around, I think.
I totally agree. And this is actually what broke me with Trump in the election cycle was the interview they did with Tapper where he refused to denounce the KKK.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It was that where I said, well, I don't care what you're selling. You're not allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is, of course, the most egregious aspect of what Bannon did, turning it into what he proclaimed to be a platform for the alt-right is just insane. I mean, insane.
Yeah.
The idea that you're going to have a bunch of people on there who are openly praising people like Richard Spencer. Andrew basically threatened to break his fraternity at Tulane because they wouldn't let in a black pledge at one point. Right?
Yeah.
He's the one who forced the issue on that.
Yeah, I don't know. The thing is, so now I want to talk about I get a lot. I get criticism from because I was very critical of Trump, and I would say that I'm very positive. And I notice when I'm on Twitter, people that I like will say I've changed, and they'll cynically say, or they'll kind of accuse me cynically that like, well, at least you know where your bread is buttered, like completely ignoring the fact that I've been going against the grain in every aspect of my life since I don't know how long, and actually being against the grain in a lot of ways here at Fox during the election. But it's like, I wonder if there is, is there a way where people can kind of just go, okay, instead of saying you've changed, like, let's actually argue over the specific policies and things like that. Tell me why I'm wrong. Instead of telling me what my intent is. Do you follow?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think this is one of the big problems. It's one of the reasons, actually, I think I've been able to survive despite being, fairly virulent about what I thought about, Trump during the last election cycle, is that I was making clear the whole time the reason that I was critical of him was because I didn't think he was conservative enough. Well, now he's acting you know, and also, you know, aside from the personal issues.
Yeah.
But now, you know, in the last 8 weeks, I've been, I think, highly complimentary of Trump because I actually like what he's doing.
Yeah.
I think it's imperative that we get rid of this whole intent, you know, I'm going to try and attribute intent to you that obviously isn't there.
Yeah.
Or even if it's not obviously not there. I mean, bottom line is, how about this? How about I get to characterize why I'm doing something since I'm the only one inside
right.
my brain.
Exactly.
And you get to determine whether what I'm saying is inconsistent with other things that I've said before. And I think that when people do this kind of broad spectrum, well, you were anti-Trump and now you're pro-Trump.
Mm-hmm.
How about this? How about I'm my principles are exactly the same. Maybe he moved to me.
Yeah.
Right. Is that a possibility? Is it a possibility that, as you say, a year, you know, 2 years ago, if you would have said Ivanka Trump's going to be a top member of the Trump administration,
mm-hmm.
and yet we are going to pull out from Paris, we're going to have, you know, Jerusalem, capital of Israel, we're going to have a massive tax cut, we're going to be talking about a serious move to build a wall, right? All this stuff is going to happen. Like, how about the facts on the ground change?
Yeah.
Right? I can only base my opinion on what's happening in front of me. I can't base my opinion, and I'm based on what I think is going to happen based on those facts in front of me. I can't base my opinion on crap that hasn't happened yet. And when different things happen, then I'll change my opinion. I mean, my tone toward Trump, I'm sure, is much warmer now than it was 8 weeks ago because I like a lot of the stuff that he's done in the last 8 weeks. And guess what? If he does a bunch of crap in the next 8 weeks, my tone will reverse.
Yeah, and I think that it's like, where's the big gripe now for even the real haters? Because it's like I said this before, that he is going to be a centrist. I think at some point he's going to come out as a centrist. I don't know when, but I think I feel like that.
I tend to agree with you. I think this is, and this is the scary thing, by the way, for Republicans, you know, for conservatives. If the Republicans lose the House and the Senate, I don't think Trump is going to sit there with the veto pen.
Yeah.
I think Democrats will pass stuff, and I think he'll sign it.
Yeah,
I think that's his tendency.
Yeah, because also he almost looks at deals independent of the shading, the ideological or the political shading. If a deal is done, that's a check on his box.
This is right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, I understand.
This is totally
that.
Right.
It's like doing chores.
He's a Brit. Here's the thing. He's a brand guy. He's not a policy guy.
Yeah.
So when there's a picture of him standing next to a bunch of people signing something, that is a better picture for his brand
right.
than a picture of him vetoing something.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I think it almost is that simple. I mean, the truth is that everybody talks about how he's a phenomenal businessman. I don't know that he's a phenomenal businessman. I will say he is one of the world's great marketing geniuses.
Yeah, I agree.
That he certainly has a genius for marketing. And that's because he's a Hollywood guy, right? I mean, Greg, you know Hollywood. The fact is that he looks much more like a lot of the people you worked with at PR firms in Hollywood
mm-hmm.
than he looks like a real estate mogul, because that's really what he is, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's been a guy who's been on the front pages of newspapers since the time he was in his 20s.
Yeah.
So when it comes to being president, you think he really cares what the bill is that's put in front of him? I mean, he made that clear in that immigration meeting yesterday. It's not like he not only does he not care really what's put in front of him, which he openly said, I'm not sure he even knows what's put in front of him.
It was like Ann Coulter. All you got to do is listen to it, because, like, people who are on the left who are upset should just watch Ann Coulter, because she's
oh my goodness,
you know, I mean,
I get points to Ann, you know, like,
yeah,
you
too.
Write a book called In Trump We Trust,
yeah,
but then you actually have the stones to say, listen,
yeah,
I basically got bamboozled on this issue.
Yeah.
Like, I'll give her points for consistency, because that's a lot more than I can give to you. You want to talk about people who are really inconsistent? It's the people who are saying, I'm voting for Trump because he's going to be the hardest on the border of anyone ever, and then Trump says a bunch of nonsense that has nothing to do with that, and they go, well, I'm still in favor of Trump because, and then they just shift their reason. It's like,
yeah,
well, you know, be consistent about your rationale here.
Yeah, because, you know, the thing is, and I'll let you go, because I realize we've gone over, but it's the people who ripped Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush for holding stronger opinions who are now, but I also understand that in a way too, that, like, he's just persuasive. And the persuasion is like, now you're in with him. And I actually, the things that really pissed me off about him now make me laugh, because I adjusted the context for Trump for myself. I said, he's basically on a 4-year comedy roast. It's not, and then that made it so much easier for me.
I think there's some truth to this. I mean,
yeah,
how the lens you view him through.
Yeah.
Makes a difference. Now,
yeah,
we haven't had to watch the consequences of that lens yet, right?
Right.
So, I mean, this is why 2018 matters, because it's all fun and games until you lose the House and the Senate.
Right.
Then things start to matter, right? So,
yeah,
so all of the fake news, I'm going to have the fake news media wars. That stuff's funny. Okay, it's
yeah,
funny. But it ain't that funny if it means that you lose half the country. So,
yeah, no,
you know, we'll have to see. Well, you know, so I can enjoy it in the moment,
mm-hmm,
but I also am trying to reserve a part of myself that says, this may not be the best idea. And if you just put down the damn phone for 5 minutes, his approval ratings would rise by somewhere between 5 and 10 points, which, by the way, is pretty much true. Every time he leaves the country, his approval ratings increase by somewhere between 5 and 10 points because there's a 12-hour time difference, and Fox and Friends is on in the middle of the night in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, that's so funny. But then again, the counter argument would be, but that's why he won, was that he wouldn't put the phone down. You know, he wouldn't. He's
right.
He doesn't care.
All I can say about that, you know, that's not one of my favorite arguments. The reason being that winning is an accomplishment, but I'm not sure it's a strategy.
Yeah.
Like, let's be real about this. I mean, it's the greatest surprise in the history of American electoral politics. I'm not sure a lot of people inside his team thought he was going to win. Mm-hmm. He also happened to be running against the least likable person ever conceived on God's earth.
Yes, he won't go away. So, Ben, always a pleasure. And if you want to get it, your last book was Bullies, right? So that's
that was a few ones ago. Push that one. That's the best one.
Okay. So. Which one? Okay, so go get that book and check out his podcast, which is wildly successful. And Ben, I know you're never going to be on my show because of your schedule, but one of these days, hopefully, when we don't tape on a Friday. All right, buddy.
Exactly.
Good talking to you.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
You got
it. Good talking to you.
Bye bye.